a 13-year-old who lost his life, and a 16-year-old whose life will never be the same again. No one was prepared for what unfolded at River Valley High School 4 days ago. Tonight, we try to pick up the pieces. We want to know, how can we move on? And what more can we do for our students? Joining me on this special live forum tonight is Nicodemus Lim, who has been part of the team at Thye Hua Kwan Family Service Centre at Jurong. They have been lending support to the students and staff at River Valley High School. We also have with us clinical psychologist Dr. Sean Yee. Also, former school counsellor Gary Koh. And Hashima Jasni from Project It'll Be All Right, a youth-led group which advocates mental well-being. And tonight we'll also be addressing some of the questions that you have sent in to us. Welcome to all. You know, maybe you can take me through the immediate aftermath. What do you think were some of the emotions, the thoughts that were going through for the parents, the students and the staff who were all affected? Sean?
Well, I suppose, like, the clear ones that we've already heard a lot, you know, been talked about, the shock to numbness, the immediate fears, anger perhaps as well, you know, anxieties, you know, feelings of sadness, all this would be pretty common. Yeah.
I think the fear factor is definitely spikes in an occasion like this. Fear, because school is supposed to be a safe environment, the fear as a parent, I'm fearing for my child. As a student, I'm fearing, is something going to happen to me? Is someone else out there, you know, is it safe to even be coming here? And so I think the fear factor definitely is an emotion that's going through many.
And this fear, who would it be greatest for? Mm. The friends, the parents? I mean, who do you think would be really feeling it right now?
I think everyone, right? Yeah. Everyone in the school is going to be feeling that way, from the cleaners, the vendors, the principal, you know, staff, and obviously students as well. And students, if you know, the classrooms closest to the place or the toilet, that's the toilet that they frequently go to. I mean, you're going to have a spectrum of people, but everyone's going to be affected somewhat.
Is it fair to say that those who were closer to the individual, I mean, whether it's physical proximity, location, or perhaps interacted in classes with this particular individual, I mean, Nick?
Of course, those who are there to witness the incident might be witnessing firsthand the trauma. However, there are people who may not have enough information, and that can spike anxiety as well.
And what is the impact like for them? I mean, when you talk about this trauma, you know, what is it? How is it hitting them?
Well, as Sean has said, yeah, the immediate negative emotions, those are really normal. Yeah, and the thoughts that run through their mind, that may cause some numbness, shock, confusion, and all this psychological response, which we call trauma. Right. Yeah.
If I can perhaps add on a bit more, to differentiate a bit more, I suppose we want to try to look at how these initial feelings, right, are actually quite normal, okay, as a result of a situation that is tragic and kind of like unpredictable. Separate that from more traumatic responses where we start to feel really quite overwhelmed and hence experience significant amounts of distress as well.
Well, a lot of focus, I mean, at this initial stage has been placed on the students. But, you know, as someone pointed out on River Valley High School's social media page, they actually wrote, "Please remember that our teachers and staff are also grieving." Mm. So do you think this group, or would they be perhaps dealing with it in a different way? Mm. Gary?
I think staff and the relevant stakeholders, they will feel the primary responsibility is to care for the precious children or the students they have under their care. So they will go into an operation mode. Yep. I have to do this rather than a feeling mode, which will ultimately hit them. Or they may be feeling it, but while in school, I need to do this to care for them. So priority is always, I have to care for my students, carry. But when they go home, or even, you know, weeks or months later, when the emotions overwhelms them, that's when, you know, a lot of care needs to be, okay. To be mindful that they are going to go through certain things as well. But it might not be at this present moment where the adrenaline is taking over. I'm just going to care for the student first.
All right. So because in the school, it's an operational, you know, I got to help these guys, I got to help these students, I'm looking out
My
for them.
My priority is for them.
But
first.
It will hit them later on.
Definitely, definitely.
Shima, you work with a lot with young people, you know, and in fact, some of the young people have said, it's not just us, it's our teachers as well who need help, you know? I mean, did that surprise you, that reaction?
I guess, I think the youth understand that everybody is affected by the incident. It's not just the youth themselves, the students themselves, but also the teachers and everybody. So when we get this kind of responses whereby it just shows that they are aware of the whole situation and probably what they are driving towards, it's more of finding understanding from the members of the public. Mm-hmm. Like, hey, it's not about just the students, but if there are such incidents happening to schools, we should also care for the teachers, like, do not stress the teachers who are also affected and do not dismiss how they are feeling. Because we tend to focus on, maybe, like, what kind of preparations are there, like, given for my student, for my child, perhaps.
Right.
Yeah, so this is something that I think today the students probably would have resonated and probably are more mindful about the whole situation.
Can I just add, because I think also one of the concerns that we need to be exploring, that the teachers or students are told, please don't speculate, don't share with someone else. But what that does sometimes is, I can't share with anyone, then I'm going to struggle in silence. Yeah. Who can I really talk to? So it's to always remember that, okay, there are safe places that we can open for you to be comfortable talking to, rather than you shouldn't be saying anything to anyone. Then if my parents ask me, I'm also not going to say anything because I'm told not to say anything. Yeah.
And that's difficult because that is the first question everyone asks. What happened, right?
Yep.
I mean, and parents too, when the kids come home, they'll be saying, you know, yeah, tell me what happened. But actually, how do you think it's hitting the parents? How is it affecting them? Should we also be looking at that?
Parents always want to do their best for their children. You know, that's understandable. At the same time, you know, I think sometimes parents would want to approach the students or children, right, in a way that they are most comfortable with. Most often, quite familiar responses. Either, you know, if I'm quite a protective parent, I'm going to hands-on and try to check in with you all the time, as opposed to parents that, you know, might shut down, dismiss a little bit because that's kind of like an area I'm not familiar with and I don't know how to open this up with you.
Yeah. So what then? That means you see two rather distinct group of parents in the way they are responding to the situation.
In general, I would say that there are such groups.
Right, right.
Yeah.
What about parents who may not be affiliated to the school? I mean, because this is a tragedy that has really hit the entire country. And as a parent, I cry out inside and I think, how could this have happened, you know? How would you, or what would you suggest for parents who are on the outside looking in?
I think there will be widespread anxiety, that's for sure. Yeah. Anxiety, the bigger ones as well as the smaller ones, you know, in like the bigger schools or the different kind of schools that you might see, mental health concerns come to the forefront of discussions. So we want to normalize this, you know, in a sense that there will be issues that our children go through that they may not present up to us on a platter to say that I have this problem, help me, you know.
And as a parent, rather than ask, why did this happen? Or ask your child, because your child will not know. It's asking, what are you feeling now? Yeah. What's going through your mind?
Yeah.
And giving the child the space. Because I think primary schools also hear about it. They take the same bus with an older child. They're going to hear it all. So as parents, we need to be there just to offer, and what are you feeling? What are you thinking? And just leave it as that. Because the child, depending on the relationship with the child may say certain things and then articulate and then process together. So every parent needs to be involved in this rather than just leave it to the schools.
Right. So in a way, it's opening up that channel of communication instead of coming in and saying, let me try and fix it, you know, which is very often what parents try to do. Yeah. I want to take some questions from our viewers because we asked them to send in their questions. Someone wrote in to ask about, you know, the kids being harassed, you know, maybe Shima, I can take this question. Do you see the media harassing the kids as the right thing to do? And it's not just the media. We have social media now right in our faces. How is all this adding on to what the kids, the faculty, the staff and the parents are going through?
I mean, the word harass has already a negative connotation to it. I think on top of what they are feeling, which is fear, anxiety of coming back to school and actually facing the place where they found as a safe space for students themselves, I think it is definitely not right because these are additional pressure, additional stress on top of whatever that they're feeling, because these are unwanted media attention. Mm. And at the same time, these are not part. These things are not part of their everyday lifestyle. So as much as possible, I believe that they need time and space, right, and that privacy is really, really important to them.
But that's really difficult. I mean, you know, and now if you go to River Valley School, there'll be journalists, you know, sort of outside the gates. People say when they see a student in the uniform, they want to go up and say, oh, can you tell me what happened? So they have that constant eyes on them, you know. Yeah. I mean...
I mean, this is something that is definitely inevitable because everybody wants scoops and information about what's happening. But we have to be sensitive in terms of, like, what is exactly happening. Are they really supposed to be the content that the media is looking for?
Well, not just... I mean, it is members of the public, too, who are walking by and saying, oh, I heard about your school, can you tell me more, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, it can be members of the public, it can be extended relatives, it can be even, like, friends from other schools. Yeah. I mean, these are things where we have to be mindful and aware of. As much as we are very interested and we are very concerned about the students of the River Valley High School, we need to also understand that, try to put yourself in their shoes. What would you feel like if you have faced this and at the same time you get all these additional questions that you are not looking like forward to?
A lot of them have also been commenting online on their social media pages, you know. Would you have any suggestions on how they can do this and how they can be careful in doing it in a way that, I guess, you know, because they want to express their thoughts and feelings, but at the same time, it may leave them vulnerable to others, right?
Yeah, I guess the whole social media thing, it's just really a platform for them to vent out their frustrations or their sentiments towards the situation and incident. And, I mean, I would like to also bring up the point on them being able to relate to other peers who are on their social media, who is able to relate to the incident compared to speaking up to their parents or speaking up to the older generations who may not have that same amount of, like, resonance to it. So, I mean, definitely social media, it can be the content that they put up may be insensitive or maybe the language that they use may not be the best kind of language, but it's something that we also have to be careful about in general, in terms of understanding where they're coming from.
Psychologically, I mean, just to add on here, I think developmentally speaking, it is an age range, adolescent age, whereby youth are still trying to learn the appropriate words to find them to express what they really do feel inside and how they think about a certain issue. So a great deal of effort can sometimes be used by youth to actually to think about a particular issue such as this or to not think about it at all.
Hold that thought. I mean, we do want to bring you a clip because the Director General yesterday made some remarks with regards to the incident, Director General Dr. Wong Siew Hong. So let's take a look at that clip.
The immediate aftermath of a tragedy like this is critical and sensitive. Since the incident, the school with MOE HQ's support has been proactively reaching out to affected staff and students to offer all our support. Close friends and teachers who are affected by the incident were invited to school yesterday so that MOE specialists and school counsellors who are trained in psychological first aid and trauma management will be stationed there now, can provide the necessary support. Some have already accessed the help yesterday. A room has also been set up in the school since yesterday to help affected staff, students and parents who can walk in for support and will be open throughout the whole of this week. This morning, 97% of RV students returned to school, which is similar to the regular attendance on any given school day. This is the resilience of our students and we are proud of them.
That was the Director General of Education, Mr. Wong Siew Hong. He mentioned about, you know, support And I think that really is what we're talking about here, support, especially for our loved ones. Bring you another question from our viewer, for the public wrote in from High Five, who says, if friends reach out to talk to us, how should we react, or what is the appropriate response or action? So I'm sure many of them have now friends saying, hey, what's going on? Tell me. How do you think they should respond, especially if they're a student at school? Sean?
I think we always want a sense, you know, the closer you are to the situation, you're probably going to be impacted more. So as a result, right, if your friend's reaching out to us, you know, and you start to want to feel like, you know, just think for a second, do I want to say all that much? Do I not want to? You know, do I feel comfortable at all?
Right. And that, how do you know? Well, that's really tough. How can we expect someone, a young person, to know that?
A good way, I think it's a good question, maybe is to ask the individual, right? Mm-hmm. Are you comfortable speaking about what happened? You know, if not, you know, I'm just here at arm's length.
Okay.
I'll be here for you.
And this leads me to the next question from Ming S.Y. who asks, how should we support our friends? I mean, how do we know if they need space or should we probe further? You know, at which point should we probe further even if they say, I'm okay?
Yeah.
Nick?
I think it's always good to check in, even though they might not display any signs of distress at the moment. But signs of trauma can come much later. It can be months. It can be even up to a year. Yeah. So it is about letting them have the opportunity to open up. If they're not ready, that's fine. But if they are, we can keep probing as comfortable as they can be.
Right.
Yeah.
And should this be a regular thing? I mean, if I have a friend, should I check in with him today, tomorrow, every day, or just once a week?
I think periodically, about once a month or so, if they need some space, yeah. But it also depends on the side. We need to observe for signs of distress, yeah. So if you don't notice anything, the person is fine, we just have to be on the alert. Teachers, school personnel can always check in on a monthly basis, mm-hmm. quarterly basis, just to be sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
I suppose if it triggers our insecurities, but are we disturbing in these individuals too much?
Yeah.
There will be a subset pool who will feel tremendous relief should you check in on them and have them the space to speak about things.
So that makes it, I mean, it's as you mentioned, it's challenging because it's different for every individual, right?
Yeah.
We don't have a clear answer for that. But what about those who have been more directly affected, you know, the students of the school or friends of those involved? Is there anything more we can actually do for them? Gary?
What we call the circles of vulnerability, the immediate, maybe the classmates, the CCA mates, they would be probably the ones more affected because of how well they know the person. So priority, if there are only so many counsellors or help that's going to come in, the priority will be given to this group and then it trickles down to the greater proportion of students mm-hmm. who might really not need to have a personal counselling session per se, but maybe a teacher there just to help process, we're here for you. But the first circle of vulnerability, they are the ones that as much care is given to them. Even their parents, if you need to, educate them. Educate the parents how and what you should be saying to your child when they get home. Because they're going to be in school for only so many hours, but once they get home, they're going to be with you. Mm-hmm. So as parents, I think because parents always feel like, I don't know what to say. How should I respond? Should I ask, not ask? My child doesn't talk to me. So if parents realise that, okay, there's certain things I can say and certain things I can do, we have a holistic approach. In school, they have the support here. At home, my parents are going to be supporting me as well.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I would just like to bounce off from that. As we hear from the media, MOE has already come in to perform psychological first aid. Mm. Yeah. What else can we do is looking at counselling for the long term. It's like physical wound. You know, sometimes it may not be healed well enough and then we might have to open, clean it up. Yeah. And that's what counselling does for the mind. Similarly, therapy may be a longer term solution for those who have severe symptoms. Mm.
But now the main concern that many people have is, what if copycats arise from this? Is there a concern with that? Who wants to take that? Sean?
I suppose this will always be a concern to some degree, right? And we want to stem this in some way to provide more accurate and timely information, right? That these are real issues that we want to be sensitive about, you know, provide compassion and kindness. so that we can communicate to individuals that this is not an issue to be trifled with or to make fun of as well. Mm-hmm. You know, like, can you imagine a lot of people starting to meme all these, what the facts of the case and making fun of this already.
So this is not the time for that. Well, hold on to that thought. We do need to take off for a short break. But when we come back, do you have a role in helping your child deal with what has happened? Stay with us. We'll talk more right after these messages. And welcome back. We've been discussing the tragedy at River Valley High. The incident has not just affected staff, students and faculty at the school, but the very nature of the incident has had a profound impact on all of us here within Singapore. I mean, we were speaking earlier about the immediate sort of fallout to the incident, but do you expect something like this to linger on for quite a while? Sean?
I would say, as you know, as Gary pointed out earlier on, you know, some of us would only experience the emotional effects weeks on or a bit more as well, right? So from there onwards, we might be, if it's a traumatic response, we might actually call up old memories of previous losses, frightening issues that we might have gone through before, like death of a close one, and so on and so forth,
right,
that might trigger us to feel very distressed.
And how long can this go on for?
It depends on the individual, actually.
Right. I ask that because there's a lot of attention now and there's a lot of help being given right now. But if we think about it months from now, when things have trickled down a little bit, is it concern then?
If it's a traumatic response, you know, what we will sometimes see in individuals is that they might be suddenly disturbed by dreams. Mm-hmm. They might be disturbed by something that someone said. They saw an image about something in the news. They might also get pretty upset by something they overheard on the bus on the way home.
So those can be triggers.
Triggers, yeah.
But how then can we differentiate between the short term, the long term? I mean, Nick, is there any way to deal with this?
Yeah, I think energy can be drawn from physical cuts and wounds as well. Yeah, if it's untreated, it's not noticed, and it's left open, there can be infection around the wound. It can have also long-term implications.
Right.
And complications. So we need to be able to look out for the signs and symptoms and help the person to seek treatment. Yeah.
So that's going to be my question. What are the signs and symptoms? If I'm worried about my child, what should I be looking for? Because I can't tell whether it's still lingering with them, right?
Yeah. For parents, that's actually an advantage because you see your child at home, you might be able to notice they might have nightmares, they might have sleep disturbance, they might have loss of appetite, loss of concentration, things like that are telltale signs.
Yeah, and Gary, I mean, a lot of the support will be coming from the school. As a former school counsellor, I mean, I'm going to ask you very candidly, sure. Do you think our counsellors are equipped for an event like this and to deal with it?
I think just like soldiers are equipped, no one prepares you for war, per se. Counsellors are equipped. They go through for substantial training for crisis management, how to psychological first aid and all things like that. But I guess the emotional impact is just going to be as strong, even if I'm a counsellor, even though I'm equipped, even though I have to do all these things, I know it, but I feel something else altogether. But I'll still do my job to administer help and support. Yeah, because this is like a first time ever kind of incident as far as I know. So I'm equipped, but emotionally, it's still a challenge.
Right. So maybe you can give me an example. I mean, because you're saying you have the tools, you know the methods in a way, but to actually execute it, I mean, do you have examples of the kind of training you guys have gone through?
So a crisis response when a trauma, when there's maybe an attack in the school.
Yeah.
Something goes on and then the psychological effects of what the students or staff are feeling, then they will go through a certain step of protocol. This is how to help someone who has gone through that. So, as a counsellor, we are trained to help someone in that situation.
Right.
Yeah, but obviously, again, the emotional impact is a little different. So, mentally, I know what to do. And I will do it, but emotionally, I will struggle as well.
Especially for this situation, which is something so unforeseen and unexpected.
Yep.
Does that throw things out of whack?
Definitely, definitely. Like again, the emotional response, I will feel it, but my SOP is to do certain things. And I think, if, like I said, staff, everyone will be going through, I'm going to care for the child first. That's my priority. I'm going to do all the things necessary for them. So at the back end, as a counsellor, I also need to process what I'm feeling myself. Okay. That means the counsellor needs to be counselled.
You mentioned the terrorism, you know, sort of schools have been doing a lot of practices in that. Do you think we can better prepare our counsellors for something like this?
How do you better prepare? I mean, it's just an ongoing training. I don't think anyone's going to ever be prepared, because if it's something new, and we pray that it will never happen again, you can only prepare so much, I think. Let's say if an attempt on self-harm, if I'm prepared for that, if I've done it before, I become a little more confident in supporting someone who's struggling with self-harm issues. So when it's something that's just never happened before, it throws me off a little, but I'm still going to do my what I have to do.
I suppose if I can add on to what Gary's saying, there are merits actually to respond without too much emotion at the very beginning stages of the trauma. So that might actually motivate people, mobilise people into active action, which can be quite protective, and not be super distressed as you're trying to help the person, which can be even more traumatic. So once past that initial stage, then we can start to get in touch. You know, most people who do psychological first aid wouldn't just go there, are you okay, are you okay? You know, they're just like, here's some medical medicated oil, you know, here's some tissue, are you okay?
So to be a bit a distance from the incident. But Shima, I mean, do you think relying on schools to help our students is adequate?
I think what the schools have prepared, I mean, we have a lot of, I'm sure they have a lot of resources that they made it readily available for students. But I think not just about the resources such as counselling as well as seeking professional help. I think one thing that I would like to add on would be the relatability of letting people know what you're feeling, and that comes from probably youth communities or rather older, younger adults who are also part of the youth community, so that they can speak up much more easily and also relate to these youths better. Especially, personally, I think that counselling may be... I know that that is an option, but would I proactively go for it, especially when there's this stigma going around and it's not exactly a norm yet to go
for. So the same challenge for asking a teenager to open up to their parents.
Yep, correct.
Which is very unlikely, right? I mean, Gary, perhaps you can... I know earlier you were sharing that story of how you talked to your son about suicide, actually, right? And why was that?
So last year, my wife and I, because we knew there was mental health was becoming a concern, so we thought it's about time we brought this whole topic. I mean, we've sort of talked about it before, but we wanted to... But I have a 14-year-old son. So when we talked to him and asked him, you know, what he thought about suicide, or if he was ever going through suicidal thoughts, would he talk to us? Okay. And I'm a counsellor. My wife is also trained in the field. He said no. I wasn't shocked. I wasn't... although I was sad, but I wasn't shocked because I know he loves us. He doesn't want to be a burden to us. So his rationale is, I'm not going to share with you. I know you all already have your own challenges. Why would I want to place a burden on you? So we had to go through, okay, it's fine. If you don't talk to us, who are the people you can talk to?
Yeah. So who can he talk to?
Right. So it's creating a database in his mind. Can you talk to this relative, this auntie, this cousin, this sibling, this teacher in school, this pastoral care worker in the school? So it helped him. And then we identified certain people that he would be most comfortable sharing his struggles. It didn't have to be suicidal thoughts, but his own challenges, his own fears, his own struggles that he will not otherwise talk to his parents automatically.
So you guys decided that he needed to have this database that he could turn to. Because, as we all know, no teen will ever really open up to their parents. It just doesn't make sense to them at that point of time in their life. So is that why you all decided that they needed to have someone to turn to?
Yeah, I think also the research shows that with the care from a caring adult, it's actually an important factor in the relationship for them to share what they're going through. So we found that, I need to connect my son in this area. And showing that we care for you, we are here as well. But if you're really not comfortable with us, these are the other options. Even seeing a counsellor it's okay with us.
But the fact that you were able to have that conversation with your son is already many parents be saying, wow. I mean, how do you embark on a career, you know? And yeah, how do you start a conversation with a teen like that?
Okay, so a teachable moment would be after this incident, when there's just an openness, finding appropriate time and say, hey, honey, we just need to just check in on you and just see what's going on with you, lah, and we want to be, you know, find that like a moment that if you are going through this, who can you turn to?
Okay.
And rather than out of the blue, suddenly you just suddenly bring it up. But these are teachable moments that we need as parents, capitalize on them, intervene, early intervention.
Yeah. Well, Nick, I mean, at the Family FSC, you guys have opened up a hotline, you know, for people to call in if they needed help. But from what we know, no one's really called in yet, right? Yes. Why do you think that's happened?
I think it's still early stages. As I mentioned, it might take some time for them to really get in touch with their feelings and emotions. So they might come forward much later. However, it's also to help parents who might not be able to access the school services. So this inquiry line is another channel that we want to support MOE's efforts. Yeah. And also for staff and students who might not want to be seen on the school ground seeking help, I think it's a good avenue. That they have an alternative.
Yeah. Would you advise people to actually, if let's say I'm in distress, or if my kid was, I would say call the hotline because at least they can speak to a professional versus speaking to their good friend who may give them, I don't know, perhaps the wrong advice?
Yeah. Definitely professionals will be able to process more of the emotions and point them to the right directions and tell them about the community resources that's available. Mm. However, we also train mentors, youth, to be befrienders and equip them with the skills to help someone. And we already, THK is able to help and support this group who are willing to help others.
Right. Yeah. It's great to have that number, but Shima, how many teens are going to call that number?
It's going to be very little. I have to say that upfront, which is why I think it's... I mean, we have identified that issue whereby youths are not speaking out. They're not speaking up, and then because they can't find that sense of relatability with the older generation or with parents. So, which is why the youth community groups have been growing. There has been like increase in awareness of mental health.
Okay. Wait, what are these youth community groups? Tell us, how do they work?
I mean, these vary in terms of their purpose. I mean, it can be befrienders, like what Nick mentioned, where they are readily available there. And I believe some schools also have a strong alumni network where they can have a mentor-mentee kind of connection and they can actually share whatever that they're feeling regarding the stresses in school or even outside of school. So it really varies.
Okay, it's kind of having like a big brother, big sister, someone that is nearer your age group that is more relatable.
Actually, to add to that, you know, I think these events will provide youths and a legitimate, appropriate channel to unleash whatever previous frustrations they have about things. Mm. It's just that it's aligned with this stuff as well. Right? It can be concerns about, marginalization, gender orientation, it can be coming out, it can be about how I'm disappointing my parents, I'm very frustrated with my schoolwork, it can be so many things, even COVID, you know, they don't know how to manage the degree of which they have to cut down on their meetings with their friends.
Okay. So from what you're saying, it does sound like they have quite a lot bottled up with them. And I want to highlight this because just earlier today we heard about another tragedy where a boy fell from height at SJI. What lessons do you think, you know, we can take from what has happened at River Valley?
I think we want to start the conversation going about expressing oneself, right? Maybe from the points that were shared earlier on, first thing would be about as long as I can tell something to someone, someone who I feel that I can trust, someone who is safe, right? And as long as I can express myself, at least it's better out than in. Usually that's what I would say as a first port of call. Then once we can start to feel like if we can write about it, if we can sing about it, we can express somehow, even if it's about taking a skateboard and going out to skateboard, and all that stuff helps me to feel like I'm getting it out of my system if I can't access my words at the moment.
Okay, so it's really just an avenue to let off some steam in a way.
Yeah.
But you know, is this a long-term cure or is it just a short-term burst of...
I think it's something that's ongoing. You know, so the more that I feel something, I'll have to let it out somehow. If I can't tell my family, my parents, maybe my siblings, you know, if they don't tell me, okay. Or I would just go for my friends. So the thing to add on here is also sometimes to share amongst my own group of friends, I might have the minority opinion, which then causes me to feel like I don't want to be singled out to be, hey, how come you're like that? So emo, you know, so like drama about all this stuff. Then it becomes sort of like suppressed and trivialized once more.
I think we can equip the students to know how to respond when a friend is going through that rather than if you're going through that. I mean, I'm okay. Right. But somehow, if someone else is feeling that way, what can you do rather than just be there and just have a good night's rest and then tomorrow everything will be okay and sort of dismissing because I don't know what to do. But if I'm equipped with the skills that if my classmate is showing some duress, I need to, as a caring friend, do something about it. And that's highlighting maybe to a teacher, to an adult, a coach, someone else, even my parents, so that help can come in as early as possible.
But do you think our kids are equipped with that?
I think that's where we need to equip. Whether they are equipped now, absolutely. Maybe not. But we need to be proactive in equipping.
Okay, so in that way, all of us become, I guess, the eyes and ears of, you know, to help look out for them. But a kid who is depressed may think that they can, you know, follow suit in such behaviour. They see others doing it, they may think they can copy it and there's a way out for them. How can we prevent that from happening? Nick?
I'm thinking that we need to start conversations about the exposure to violence and also the use of social media. Yeah, this might be quite general, but times are evolving. Children are accessing all these online networks much earlier. With this incident, people are putting out messages, leaks of photos and stuff, which are quite inappropriate and can be distressing for people who are not even in the community. Yeah.
If I may suggest an add-on, right? I think it's a very good idea as a good start. Also, you know, we want to emphasise to take the lead. So, for example, if schools, like principals and at all rungs of the hierarchy, to share about their fears, their insecurities, my students, you know, my well-being, you know, what has happened after this incident and how am I responding, you know, genuinely as not just your principal, but also about as a human being. You know, that the same way you might encourage parents to lead the way, to don't just talk about it in a very negative way, but also talk about it in a way such that we can create compassion, kindness, you know, to respond to this situation and make better sense it for the children. So an example would be, you know, like after this has happened, you can talk very openly about what happened, you know, because a lot of teens might be like, oh, what's this in the news? Maybe younger children as well. Mm. So you want to tell them that, you know, some people do take their lives.
Okay.
Because that's the only narrow way out. But there are other ways too.
Right.
So then that's where the parenting knowledge can all start coming in.
So in a way, you address the issue. Don't try and hide it. Address it and deal with it.
It's a likelihood they know it already.
I think one of the struggles that the teens have booking the schools, when an incident where the self-harm has taken place, they are told to hush-hush about it.
Right.
Out of respect or for whatever reasons, they're hush. But because of social media, they're all discussing, but there's no adult presence anymore.
Discussing it somewhere.
I don't talk to the teachers.
But you know what, Gary? Hold that thought because we want to talk more about mental health issues, which very often have been hush-hush and hidden away from sight. We do need to take off for a short break, but do stay with us because when we come back, we'll talk more about mental health issues and how you can spot them in our young. And welcome back. We've been discussing the tragedy at River Valley High. Now, this incident has cast a bigger spotlight on mental health in Singapore, especially in our young. So, Nick, let me start off by asking you this. Do you think this incident that's happened at River Valley will, I guess, further stigmatise people with mental illness?
Definitely, yes. But what I want to emphasise is that psychological trauma, if it's not managed well, it can lead to further mental health issues. Yeah, we call it the internalizing, externalizing behavior. Yeah, some of these students might keep the emotions within themselves and look inward, and this might lead to depression, anxiety, psychosomatic symptoms as well. those who are externalizing might have trouble in school or attendance. Yeah. So people who might not be able to manage their emotions may feel ashamed of themselves. Yeah. And that will further stimulate them in seeking help.
I mean, this is a big issue, Gary. I mean, and do you think it will be further driven home that if you are, you know, have some mental illness that you want to hide it further and not show it to the world, especially in a school environment?
I think definitely there'll be a fear. But if we as educators, if we as adults realise, and as even parents, how we communicate will be key. Saying that it is okay. All of us will go through certain patches in our life when we need to get help, psychological help, counselling help. And
right.
If we can normalise that behaviour, that it's okay, there's nothing wrong in getting help, I think we will go further in this whole journey.
But is there any way for us to... Well, it's very hard to normalise that across the board. I mean, some parents will say it's okay, but we know society may still look at it differently.
Mm.
Is there any way for us to also spot some of those who might be more prone to needing such help?
Peers will be the first line of support. They will identify if a friend's going through certain things. The teachers, obviously parents, for the home front, we are always there. We need to be aware, like certain things, if my child's withdrawing from his normal behaviour or her normal behaviour, signs and symptoms, what's happening in their mind. But again, like I said, if we educate everyone, all the young people, the students, to be the hands and feet, to be the ears, you know, what's going on around them, and maybe bring their friend along to get more support rather than just say, you go and see the counsellor, you go and see the teacher. Let's go get help together.
Okay.
Yeah.
But where is this pressure coming from? I mean, and who are these kids that are feeling it? We often hear stories about certain top schools who often have, you know, a lot of kids saying they're feeling very stressed. I mean, what do you think is contributing to that? And Gary, I'm going to ask you again because you were a counsellor at one of these schools for quite some time.
So what's contributing to their stress?
Yeah.
In my experience in the years there, a majority were family-related. So family plays an important role. Because when they are teenagers, just like we all know, teenagers, they go through the individuating process where I withdraw from my parents, I need to find my identity. And parents who have been okay all this while now face a challenging young person who speaks his mind or her mind. So the family dynamics obviously change. And sometimes the stress comes from the parents, not from the school itself. I mean, the academics is always there. It's always going to be some kind of stressor there. Mm. But majority of cases I have seen were family-related.
Okay.
So family plays a very important role.
Do you guys believe there's such a thing, there's good stress and bad stress? You know, the good stress that pushes you to do even better and the bad stress that, well, works in the opposite direction. I mean,
certainly. I mean, there's an optimal level of stress that we can deal with. Of course, bearing in mind if I can deal with that stress well, with some strategies that are good, you know, if you can deal with your studies well, you don't feel stressed about it, or if your personality is such that you are not as that anxious, you can be a bit more like calm when it comes down to a lot of stressful situations, then maybe it can be mitigated somewhat. Of course, also, if you are surrounded by a lot of people that are very supportive, it tends to assist you to deal with higher levels of stress in better ways as well.
But what if you're in an environment where there's a lot of stress for other things? Everyone's competing to get that, you know, that spot.
I mean, it's commensurate with more, you know, more accumulated stress.
Right.
We'll talk about it in terms of like a lot more cognitive load. That means more to the mind to have to think about. More concerns, whether it's competitiveness in schools.
But does that mean it's different for everyone? So as a parent, again, I have to understand my child, know what drives them or what puts them down.
Yeah, one might already assume that that's part of the equation, being a parent. But of course, we don't want to slap it on every single parent that you need to know this. It becomes very stressful to be not a good enough parent.
Mm.
You know, we want to try to encourage people, like, do the best you can. Try to connect where you can. Yeah.
Not everyone who is dealing with mental health issues has violent tendencies. I mean... could this be because, I mean, is there any... One of the first conclusions some friends told me when they heard about this incident, they were like, must be all those violent movies and violent games that our kids are playing nowadays.
The thing is, there's no clear research on it.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you've talked about how people can improve their reaction times with certain kind of games as well, right? There's some people say that you should... allow appropriate expression of anger and rage, as opposed to it being stifled, kept in, and then expressed out in a lot more violent ways. So we want to think about how we know our kids. You know, how do they manage their anger, for example? How is it manifested? Do I see them talking about their anger, or are they just acting out their anger, you know, as opposed to that? You know, like back in those days in school, we can see like students chasing the teachers around with a chair and throwing it at a teacher, for example.
Okay. Well, I don't know what school you went to.
Yeah, I mean, there are many kind of expressions of how one might deal with their rage.
Right.
And sometimes, you know, in this context as well, whereby, you know, if you were particular camps and attitudes towards what happened, you might then express these strong feelings in specific ways.
So do we then need to offer our kids an avenue to vent? I mean, it sounds like you're saying all of us have some level of frustration that we need to let go of every now and then.
I think we all need some kind of outlet, healthy outlet. I think with the whole COVID situation, sometimes the outlet is hampered, because sometimes the outlet could just be going outside, run around, go to the playground, go for walks outside, you know, just hang out somewhere else. Besides just staying cooped out at home, where just the pressure is just there. So healthy outlets, doing sports, hanging out with friends, you know, going have coffee with somebody. Those are all healthy outlets.
But you see, it's easier as adults. We can recognize that. But Shima, as a young person, do you think the teens will they know when they are like, you know, I'm on the edge. I need to let go some steam.
I think. Some youths or some teens may be able to identify what they're feeling, but at the same time, there are also a group of teens who may not be able to identify what exactly am I feeling, what am I supposed to do with it, and how am I supposed to overcome this. So, I mean, there are a lot of activities that are being put up online in terms of handling this mental health stress, but at the same time, I think social media is one of the outlets that they are using in terms of venting out their frustrations, putting up posts, even sharing of songs in terms as a representation of their moods, sharing of posts, because they find a relatability in this content, media content by other content creators. So it is very important to understand what are positive outlets, but also at the same time, it's also difficult to stop them from going overboard.
I think that's where the struggle is when it comes to social media or outlets online, because I may gravitate towards a site or a platform or a community that feeds a certain negative behaviour that I have.
Right.
So that's why, you know, as media literacy is so important for our young people. Like, okay, if I'm having an eating issue, if I'm gravitating to put a site where people are having the same eating issues, it's not going to be helpful. So how do I navigate out of that and guide
And that's a big challenge. And that was going to be my question, because that's why it's influencers, right? These people are called, because they do influence, especially our young people. Is there concern that, you know, the violence we see online, you know, the acts being done by other people, that they could be taken in by such things as well?
Of course, it is a concern that we have to keep in mind. But at the same time, we have to find people who we can relate to, and it can be even a trusted young adult in this. Like, for example, like if my parents are telling me these are violent games that you shouldn't be playing, but maybe we can explain to your parents that maybe it's not about the violence that we are actually happy about, or we are actually seeking thrill from. It can be the adrenaline rush. So that kind of understanding that we need to establish with parents, with teachers, it's more of having the parents understand where they're coming from rather than being told how to feel a certain way. Yeah.
Okay, I think you said the key word. Don't tell them, you know, because that's very often what we do as parents. We tell them what you should or should not do. There are a whole range of mental health issues that we know we're looking at. I mean, how can we address these? How can we look out for the warning signs for them, especially in our young ones? Sean, you want to take a crack?
I think one of the things I mentioned before, you know, should we know a bit more of what the usual behaviours our kids are up to? You know, what if they're suddenly quite withdrawn? You know, if they're very disturbed, you know, if they have dreams, nightmares. Okay. And if they suddenly want to just keep on sharing the same old songs over and over and over again on social media, if they are suddenly very focused on something that is kind of random as well.
I mean, you're saying sharing like really emo songs, maybe about breaking up or... So you're saying all the... can you give me an example?
I wouldn't say like it would be everything, but as long as it's out of character.
Okay.
That seems kind of like, hey, hold on a second, like there's something not right, right? We don't want to start demonizing every single thing, right? So we can come alongside. I like the idea of coming alongside and, hey, you know what? I'm here if you need to speak about anything.
Okay. Right. Are there trends you guys are seeing nowadays from our young people in terms of related to mental health and mental wellness? I mean, Shima, when you're saying, you know, with your project, you're getting a lot of stories from young people, you know, has there been an increase in the kind of youth coming and sharing with you? And what kind of stories are they sharing?
Okay, so for our project, we realised that there has been a lot of stories surrounding education as well as family, which also is what you have mentioned previously. And all these stories actually comes from different aspects of life, whether it's social relationships, whether it's education, and even work. We tend to focus a lot on the younger youths, but actually we have a lot more stories in terms of dealing with stresses at the workplace, because probably they are not equipped in schools, and that may also translate to the adulthood in terms of managing the stress and also managing anxiety in general.
Gary, have you seen an increase in the number of young people coming to see you for mental health issues?
Definitely. Just within the school itself, from the first year to the 10th year, I just seen more and more people willing to walk in, not even forced to come, but arrowed to go. You went to the counsellor, you had a fight, go and see the counsellor. No, it shifted to, I need help. I'm going to get support. So I think what the schools do, the counsellor sometimes will just give workshops and talks so that there's a face to who the counsellor is. And sometimes when you realise the counsellor is not so scary or some elderly person who's going to psychoanalyse you, and they're actually quite normal people who are just there with some skills, they're more open to doing
that. What are they sharing with you? What are the issues that they're coming in with?
Purpose, meaning, life. You know, stress is from academics is definitely a factor. But I see a lot just wondering what's purpose of life? Existential issue. Why am I studying? Why am I doing this? Okay. Because I think the shift in society definitely is parenting has changed. Where we, in Singapore, more support is given, more educated parents.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I'm sorry, I have to cut you off because we have run out of time and I have to say goodnight. Thank you all so much for the discussion tonight. Our thoughts and prayers go out to the families who have been involved. And remember, if you think you need help, do feel free to reach out to someone you love, a school counsellor, a family friend, someone that you feel that you can trust and speak to. If not, you can also call the hotline numbers that we have put on screen. But this has been a special edition of Talking Point. Thank you so much for your company. Goodnight. Thank you.